So Neoji Camp first batch we did 300 students with around 20k per student. So you can do the math there. It's 50, 60 lakhs on the side. Like if you complete my course, you get a great job. If your dream college placement is 3 lakh, I would ensure you get 6 lakh. And I was ensuring people 6 lakh, and now An Academy came in and hired 5 people at 25 lakhs.
We should do ASMR and we should just talk really slowly, and that should be our next podcast, ASMR Hindi podcast by the Indian Dream. Anyways.
हिंदी में बात करनी होगी तो मुझे बुलाइएगा, मुझे हिंदी बात करने में बहुत अच्छा लगता है। मेरी एक मेरे पॉडकास्ट भी है हिंदी में, पूरा हिंदी है वो, एक 10 एपिसोड्स 12 एपिसोड्स ऑल हिंदी।
फनी दैट यू मेंशन दिस, वी एक्चुअली स्टार्टेड अ हिंदी पॉडकास्ट वेरी रिसेंटली। gaana.com पे ये है धंधे की बात, या इट्स बिजनेस स्टोरीज इन हिंदी।
ओके, सो दिस इज गोइंग टू बी द स्टार्ट ऑफ दिस एपिसोड। हे एवरीवन, वी आर गोइंग टू बी डूइंग अ वेरी क्वाइट बिजनेस मंचीज विद यू टुडे, where we munch on some business ideas with Tanay Pratap. Hey Tanay, it's really great to have you here today. Thanks for coming.
This is a joke that Tanay, don't react to this. We'll do a proper intro.
This would have been nice, like, hey Sahil, it's amazing to be here. Thank you for having me. We can do this.
I think let's keep it, yeah. It'll be funny. Anyway, Siddharth, you can do the proper intro now.
Perfect. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Indian Dream. This is the Business Munchies segment, and today we are joined by Tanay Pratap. He's a senior software engineer at Microsoft, and he's built not one, but two side hustles, two profitable side hustles. So first, before we get into the ideas, let's talk to him about what are these side hustles, Neoji and Rocket. Tell us about what these are, Tanay.
Yeah, so there were two issues. One was that startups couldn't hire, and because they wanted to hire, but hiring is an issue in India. There are few people who have most of the offers in hand, while there's a bigger crowd waiting outside in the line, not getting recognized. So Rocket solved that issue by making hiring more easier, as in I would give you 6 profiles and you would hire 3 out of them, because the hiring is based on project and not interviews anymore. So the partners do interview, but what you are going to work in real life, you would work on a web app or a mobile app or something like that. You just create 4 or 5 of those and showcase that to your prospective employer, and employer hires you on based on just that and nothing else. No background, no IIT, no NIT, nothing required, no engineering, nothing required. So that's Rocket for you. When we did Rocket, the demand was so high, and the quality we were getting of, you know, making self-learning 5 projects, the quality and quantity both were not up to the mark. So then I thought of getting into the ring and started Neoji Camp, like Thanos, let me do it myself. And then I did it myself. So now Neoji is the training part wherein you can come, learn all of it, make 5 projects if you want to, or go do your own startup, things like that. But end-to-end learning of how to build a product, you can learn there. And then you can either go through Rocket or you can go outside, go through your own college placements. And that's all happening, and we'll talk about that. But so Neoji is like the training ground, and Rocket is where the hustle begins.
Perfect. We'll move on to the Munchie segment. One last question to help people understand. What is the scale of both these businesses that you've been able to build as side hustle? Whatever numbers you're comfortable sharing.
So Neoji Camp first batch, we did 300 students with around 20K per student. So you can do the math there. It's 50, 60 lakhs on the side. But then there is a team and a co-founder. And honestly, this would be sad to hear on this podcast, but I'm not doing it for the profit. Like the motives are very different from making this business. So my idea was to make the business viable, but not, you know, not VC viable, not 10x, 20x on the returns.
We are not sad at all. Those are the kind of businesses that we end up talking about, is these viable businesses, right? And the agenda is not to just keep earning money. Obviously, you're creating a lot of impact, but that's the byproduct of creating that impact.
And anyways, Microsoft pays you enough, so you don't have to worry about any profits.
Yeah, that's the good part, right? So I have a co-founder who's full-time and she runs Neoji, and she's happy with the money we are getting and the team is happy with what we are paying them. So all in all, it's a viable business and we would definitely make some cash out of it, but we haven't figured out how much. As I said, I'm not a business person. I don't do the math. I'm like, let's just get in and...
You just do the math and the coding. That's the only place where you do the math.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's move on, Danai. Where to the business munchie section, right? What idea do you have for us today?
I would say anybody can do the skill-based thing. I have been looking for people to do this. I am a web dev expert, right? I can only teach web dev, but you can do a product CBC, a business CBC, how to get started with a viable business idea. Anything which you know and you have, 5 years of experience building that, you know the intricacies, the difficulties of doing that. I think you can just create a viable side business for yourself, teaching that. And also, making this world a better place sounds very, I don't know what to say this, but it does happen. When you start teaching other people, you feel better about yourself. You feel good about yourself.
So for our audience, when you say CBCs, these are cohort-based courses. And from what I'm hearing, you're basically saying if you've been doing a certain kind of skill set over the last 4 or 5 years, especially in the new dynamic tech world, the traditional institutions are not geared to teach this kind of stuff, right? Most of the engineers who come out are not employable because they've not been taught the kind of skills that you require to survive at a workplace. This is true for digital marketers. This is true for all kinds of fields. Our education institutions are way behind in terms of the coursework content. And hence, people who are, let's say, 5-10 years into their career are more suited to teach this. And what you've laid down is a framework of doing this while you have your own thing, while you're working on your own job, till you figure out how big this could be and maybe then sort of jump into it full time. Perfect thing that can start as a side hustle, eventually become the main hustle.
My main problem with cohort-based courses is I've seen a lot of these creators make this, right? They think that, look, oh, I'm an expert at this, I'm an expert at that, and I'll make this cohort-based course. And this is a problem that you've probably solved, but this is a question that I have for you. How do you make sure that students keep coming to your course over a long period of time? At first, especially if you're a big creator, you'll have a lot of people join you for your first course, second course, third course, maybe. But you need to make sure that they're coming for a long period of time. The ones who are really good at marketing, like I've seen this guy called Digital Prateek. I've seen Abhinav Chikara, who's really good at it. There's this other guy who does it for LinkedIn. I forgot his name.
Weber.
But they're really... Okay, you guys know Weber, I don't. But these guys are really good at making sure that students keep coming back. Their websites are really slick and they make you do it. But if you make this kind of course, you're not going to do it if only one person joins, right? If the next batch of Neoji, you just have one student who's paying 25,000 rupees, it's not worth your time. It's only worth your time if there are a lot of people. So that's my biggest issue when it comes to these kind of courses. And I don't know how you guys have solved it.
So next batch, the waitlist is already 3,000 and I can't have 3,000 people. So I'm pretty sorted out on that issue. People would keep coming. I think people would keep coming if they... One thing is pricing is accessible, right? A 6-month course taught by a senior software at Microsoft at 20,000 is like peanuts for people where they are paying 2.5 lakhs every year for an engineering degree, which is not teaching them anything.
So basically, Tanay, what I'm getting from you is that you need to make sure that your pricing and your value proposition match. So if I, for example, am charging 1 lakh for a course where I teach web development, and I actually don't know anything about web development, I'm going to learn it as I teach these people, then nobody's going to pay for it. But you have the credentials to back it up. And people like Abhinav Chikara have the credentials to back it up because he worked as the head of design at an academy and all these other people. Okay, so that really makes sense. So as long as you have the value prop, people are actually learning something at your course, then I guess you'll also get that word of mouth.
I think one thing which also adds to this is what are you getting out of the course, right? If you complete my course, you get a great job. if your dream college placement is 3 lakh, I would ensure you get 6 lakh. And I was ensuring people 6 lakh, and now Unacademy came in and hired 5 people at 25 lakhs. Suddenly it changes all everything. And this 3000 waitlist is before I have made this news public. So I don't know how this will maybe go to 5000 or 10000.
Do you guys do a lot of marketing, or is it mostly based on your credibility and your co-founder's credibility that people are joining?
I have not run even a single rupee ad, if that's what marketing means. But my entire presence on internet itself is marketing. Like, I have 100k followers across the internet, and then a lot of reach for a guy like me.
I don't know why you said that, but one of the things that I'm hearing, going back to Sahil's original question of like, how do you keep getting people? Most of the people that are running cohort-based courses right now, all the people that you had mentioned, first started with building the audience in some way or form, right? It's not like the audience was built because of the cohort-based courses. I think there was, for you, I think Rocket obviously helped significantly because you were helping people get placed. So people are looking up to you, and then there's a natural transition. Oh, I can also help you sort of learn what it needs to get placed. So there has been some effort that all these people have done to build the audience initially. Without that, cohort-based courses are difficult to pull off, right? Because lower barrier to entry, it's technically lower barrier to entry. You could put up a website, you could put up like, you know, this is what I'm going to be teaching. And I've seen some people who copied Abhinav Chikara's webpage, like the entire page as is, but they couldn't get the same kind of attention because there's no credibility behind that person. So if you have that going for you, go out and start something. If you don't have that credibility going for you today, figure out how to build that credibility. Figure out how to get yourself out there and get that following initially so that you could launch this course.
Yeah, I can say one more point if I can add on to this is, you also need to be really good at teaching so that people, you know, like you, love you. And I've been doing this from past 7 years now. 2014 is when I started teaching offline. I went to all the colleges in India just to gauge how good or bad I am, like people like me or not as a teacher, as a trainer. So you have to test the waters. I'm not saying it would take 7 years for you. Internet has resolved those issues. But so you have to be good at three things. You have to be good at storytelling to build your audience. You have to be good at teaching, really good at your craft as a teacher, and then really good as a craftsman as what you are teaching. If I'm not a great software engineer, I cannot teach a course like this. And same with Abhinav. If he's not a great designer himself, no matter what the credentials are on the background, you have to be great at it, because students would, you know, when someone taught you in your class, you would know, right, this banda knows or not. You have that very strong feeling about every teacher. The moment he enters the class, you know, okay, this guy knows his shit. This guy does not. And so that's very important. You have to understand that it's an easy play, but also it's very hard to get your students to love you, to like you.
No, but you know, what you're saying is so true. If you bring that credibility, then of course it will show when you are teaching. And the thing is that Siddharth and I have also been exploring the idea of building a cohort-based course because we are influencers now. that's the thing that I'm most afraid of. Do I have that, the credibility? Do I have, when I'm teaching, will I be able to show that confidence that like, I have done this and I know what I'm talking about and therefore you should believe me? Or will people be like, dude, this guy who is this guy? Yeah? He's just some random guy from the internet. I bought his course, now he's taking my money and now he's just telling me random stuff. I think that is probably one of the most important things to be aware of. And that can be the death of a cohort-based course, is if you're not actually an expert at the field that you're trying to teach.
Yep, definitely.
What Tanay mentioned very early on is all these courses are very outcome-based. And if the outcome is not strong, you're anyways going to get found out, right? If it's just theoretical gyan or certificate mil gaya at the end of it, you're anyways going to get found out. Most of these cohort-based courses are saying, hey, it's resulting in a better job for you. It's resulting in either a career pivot for you. So very hard outcomes. And people who are looking to get into these courses need to figure out those outcomes.
I just realized the cohort-based course we're planning is the complete opposite of Tanay's. We're thinking of doing a no-code course and yours is a coding course. So we are the antithesis, whatever, how we pronounce it, opposite of Tanay's course.
that's not opposite, that's complementary. I think no code is the first thing you should learn to get into coding. So if you're doing a no code, it's great. People can validate their ideas. Mostly business people can validate their ideas. And when they scale, they would need developers. They would hire from us. It's a very complimentary course for my course. So please do that.
They'll hire your coders for 25 lakhs and then you can start marketing that.
Yeah.
So, Tanay,
good for me.
Yeah, we'll all of us will make a lot of money. Chal, let's do it. Siddharth, I think we should move on to the next idea. What do you have?
Yeah. Okay. So this is something that I've been looking into for a couple of weeks now. And the entire thing is around the business of religion. This is going to be very apolitical. Before I talk about what are the ideas, I'm just going to say religiosity, however you say it, is increasing in India. I think there are a bunch of surveys done last year, 2017, 2018, and all the metrics keep saying that the business of religion or religion in general, people following religion is increasing. I foresee that after the pandemic, it's going to be even more because people who come out unscathed are going to be even more grateful, right? And that's how you sort of get into the entire religion piece. So it's on the rise. It's a $40 billion market already, which is like 2.5 lakh crores. I don't even know how many zeros exist in that number. That's how you know it's a big enough market.
Question. Do you know what that $40 billion is broken into? Like, what are people spending on?
No, so I don't know the categorization in terms of like exactly what people are spending on how much, but I don't know the broad categories, and I'll go into that. But in general, it's growing at a very fast double-digit clip. Also, 10,000 crores, by the way, is just agarbattis. It's just agarbattis. That's it. And there's a company. There's a very interesting company that started called Phool. Phool. They have brilliant marketing, by the way. And what they've done, they got covered by the World Economic Forum, Business Insider, a bunch of other companies. And it's a very interesting model. They take all the waste sort of flowers that are donated to the temples. They take all of that and convert that into these natural sort of incense sticks, agarbattis, basically. And they generate a lot of employment because this is sort of made manually. So a lot of women get employed. They got covered. They got a lot of media attention, and they're doing decent revenues. It's direct to consumer of sorts. Then there is religious tourism, which is a significant part of this sector, which is also, I think, where the least opportunities exist because there's an existing infrastructure of like religious tours and travels and packages and stuff like that. One of the earlier episodes we covered this helicopter company that does 50, 60 crores in revenue, out of which majority is from that Chardham Yatra and the various religious yatras that they do on the helicopters, right? So religious tourism, a significant chunk of it. But the ones that I'm excited about is where the tech comes in, where the new age stuff comes in. Let's assume that this thing that religion is, business of religion and the demand for religion is increasing, so everything around it is going to increase. The obvious things that you can build is a marketplace of sorts, e-commerce marketplace of sorts for all the puja essentials. Everything that you need to do a puja can be there, can be branded, good quality stuff. There's a company called Shubh Cart. They started out as online, but eventually had to pivot offline because they started too early, I think. But they are present in 100 or 200 Reliance retail stores. They're a well-known brand in this space now, doing $3 to $4 million in revenue, as far as I know. Just doing these puja goods from agarbattis to everything that's required for puja, basically, right? I think there's opportunities to build more stuff within this broad category. I don't think this is too complicated. Where it gets complicated is if you build a religious concierge service, right? Hear me out. This is slightly crazy, but hear me out. With the pandemic, people obviously haven't been able to travel as much, and the need to sort of be at these mandirs and temples and mosques has not gone away. What if you have this digital service where you say, hey, I want a puja, whatever special puja is done at Tirupati, I want that to be done under my name. Can somebody organize it, right? So a concierge service where somebody goes and actually does the puja on your name, you do the transaction online, all of that, and maybe you get pictures or video or whatnot. That's one crazy idea. The second crazy idea, by the way, is these aartis that happen at a lot of these temples and different things that happen at different sort of religious places, at churches and mosques, can you actually record that stuff and stream it live under pay-per-view, right? Say that it takes 50 rupees or 100 rupees to actually see this aarti if you want to. I am sure there's a big enough market sitting across India, people between 40 to 70, 80, who are going to say, hey, take that 50 rupees, take that 100 rupees, and let me see this aarti. You'll have to figure out revenue share with temples and all of that. That's going to be an interesting place to be. But I think there's an opportunity here. One more idea before mixing meditation with religious stuff. Meditation apps in the US blew up, specifically around sleep and, you know, stress and anxiety and whatnot. The same thing in vernacular content itself, I think, is going to work. But if you go slightly further and mix it with religious sort of learnings and preachings and whatnot, and make it a meditation vernacular app, I think there's going to be takers for that also. Micro payments that people will do to sort of become part of sessions and stuff like that. All these babas or religious gurus that we see, there's a segment of like the sadgurus and, you know, Sri Sri who have their own strong following. But there's a second or third layer of these gurus who have a decent following, but not large enough. And at the end of the day, I think of these as influencers or creators or whatever you call it. Can you give them a platform where more people are able to access what these guys are talking about, right? Like, it's funny to look at what Tanay is saying. Tanay is saying, you're going to get me canceled. You're going to get yourself canceled. You're going to get a lot of people canceled. We're going to edit it out, Tanay. We're going to edit some of it out. But this is what we like doing. We push the envelope. And then take it back. One last thing. AR, VR, by the way, in this whole thing is going to work beautifully, probably 2 or 3 years down the line, because we don't have the necessary tech, but I think it's going to work beautifully. I'm going to stop my rant and I'm going to let you guys tell me that we are not going to keep this segment.
Tanay, do you want to go first or should I?
You go first. I have a ton of ideas, so I'll go last.
Okay. So what you said about AR VR reminds me of this TV show called Rami. It's on Prime Video. You should check it out. But in one of the episodes, these two guys, they're two Muslim guys in the US, and they didn't want to go all the way for Hajj, right? They were feeling lazy. So they just did a VR Hajj where they were in Mecca and they were like, oh, I'm touching this thing. Oh, I think they paid somebody to wear some, anyway, doesn't matter. So I mean, obviously you could do the same thing for Indian holy sites, right? But oh my God, you went on a big, massive rant. Okay, a couple of things. Number one, yeah, the gurus. I've seen a lot of older folks, especially like after their significant other passes away, they get much more religious. And then they start watching TV and they start watching a lot of these different gurus who are on TV and they get really into it. And obviously the generation that is in the 80s, 90s, 70s right now, they're not digitally native, but the next generation will be much more into it. And probably if you can capture, I can't believe I'm saying this, but probably if you can capture them right now when they're in their 40s and, you know, get them more into the app and like, I guess, do pujas on app and like other stuff, you can probably reap the benefits 30 years down the line, I guess.
I think people in 40, 50 are paying a lot of money for, who do you think is fueling all this religious tourism in India? It's people in 40, 50, 60, right? So you have them there and they have the paying capacity.
No, that's true. You're 100% correct. Man, I really want to hear what Tanay has to say.
I hope we edit the parts which might get us in trouble. But I really like the idea we have. And I think this again goes back to your need, right? Like in the hierarchy of needs, you have a need that you need to feel connected to a bigger power, to a bigger plan. And when you go and do a business where a need is answered, you always have the product market fit for you, you know, built. So anything which you do, and I was thinking about the same thing, is like when the kid who got 25 LPA package, I was so happy. I was like, if I would go out, I would donate a lot of money today to someone just because I'm so happy. I want to do something good. If I had something like this, like, you know, Tirupati mein, go do this piece for me, you know, 5,000 rupees, 10,000 rupees, like, please do this, you know, because overall, I and a lot of people who are very young also, I'm 30s, I feel young when we're talking about 70, is that they believe that there is a higher power working behind scenes, and they also want to connect to them and thank them at many, you know, juncture in their life. So definitely this business would work. The meditation thing, I have been working on that idea for a very long time. I think meditation is undervalued in India and overvalued in US. The kind of meditation they do is not the right kind of meditation, because it plays only till your mind's level. There's a deeper level for meditation than your mind, and there's subconscious, and there's Atma, and there's everything. So I think I completely agree with your point that the cohort-based course model in meditation would be a killer thing to do. You know, take 50 people, transform them. Outcome is quite clear. After 3 months, you would have better relationship with yourself. You have grown a lot. So I think this is a great market. Thank you for confirming my belief on this. Maybe I'll go and do that, because I have all the things necessary. I have a person who would do that, and everything is there. So thank you.
Okay, there's this organization called the Conscious Entrepreneurship Program or something like that, CEP, and they basically connect meditation, spirituality, and thinking more deeply about your business. So like the people that I know who have gotten really into it, they do like an hour, 2 hours of meditation every day. They think really, really deeply about their own entrepreneurship, about their own entrepreneurial journey. Where are they going? What should I do? What should my 10-year goal be? 5-year goal be? How am I going to do it? Et cetera, et cetera. And then I think I've never been a part of it, but I've spoken to the person who heads the CEP program. And I believe all of it has a spiritual angle to it as well. So it's kind of similar to what you're saying, but I can totally see it also working online. You know, you start with guided meditations, you start with giving lectures about, yeah, what is the idea behind why you're doing this meditation, why you're doing all these chants, do it for daily 1 hour for 6 months or 2 months, however long it has to be. And I think it would work. I think there's a big market. I know so many founders, entrepreneurs, even professionals who are so stressed out, and they find that meditation works well for them, but they're not able to find a good meditation program except for like Headspace. And, you know, those American programs have their own problems, like you mentioned. So I think that's interesting. Teach people how to do it themselves.
So basically, I think there are tons of opportunities in religion, in and around religion itself. I'm just going to leave you with one website that I came across during this research, which was just a very simple, amazing idea called onlineprasad.com. All these prasads from different temples can get shipped to you if you order it from that website. That's primarily why it started. And now they do a bunch of DTs and stuff like that, where you can buy religious stuff. But the concept of online prasad was amazing. With that, let's move on. Sahil, what do you have for us?
Man, after Tanay's really deep, detailed discussion about cohort-based courses and your detailed discussion about religion, this is going to sound so not intelligent. Okay, so for the last 2 months, I've really gotten into F1. If anybody knew me growing up, I was not interested in F1 at all. I had zero interest in F1 my entire adult life as well, until 2 months ago.
F1 is Formula One racing.
Basically. Yeah, F1 is Formula One racing. Thanks for clarifying that. But about 2 months ago, I watched this Netflix show that my wife got me into. I saw it a bunch of times on the Netflix, you know, that scrolling thing. I was like, it's going to be some stupid Formula One show. I'm not going to watch it. I ended up watching it. It's called Drive to Survive. And then I got really, really into Formula One. Both me and my wife, and my wife as well, does not care at all that much about all of these sports. She doesn't even watch football, cricket, or anything. So I really got into F1, and I was like, there must be other people like me, and how come Formula One decided to make a Netflix show right now? I did some digging, and here's a couple of things I found out. Number one, Formula One is the fastest growing sport on all of social media. Last year, all of their social media engagements grew by something like 100%, which is ridiculous. It's faster than NBA. And NBA is huge on social media. I keep seeing it on YouTube and everywhere. It grew faster than baseball. I don't know why I get a lot of baseball content on my YouTube. It grew faster than everything.
These sports that you've spoken about don't really matter, by the way. You're like, I don't know why NBA and baseball are considered fast growing. India is behind cricket. Is it faster than cricket?
So it grew faster than cricket. That's what's important, right? So I was like, okay, why the hell did this happen? So apparently in 2017, up till 2017, Formula One was owned by this guy called Ecclestone. And Ecclestone came out with this. Ecclestone believed that social media was completely useless and that you should just forget all social media. He said that the only guys I care about are those 70-year-old guys who have money in their pocket and you can pay me for stuff. And so he just was like, I don't care. Then in 2017, Formula One got bought over by a company called Liberty Media. It's an American company. And then Liberty Media got deep into everything on social media and everywhere. Now you have Formula One memes. You have so many channels coming up on Formula One on YouTube everywhere. So I was thinking that since Formula One is growing so fast, there's probably nobody who's able to keep up with how fast it is growing. So a couple of ideas I thought about. Number one, doing Formula One in Hindi as a YouTube channel. I did some research about that. There's only one channel that does Formula One in Hindi. They have only 100 followers. It's not that big. But then I thought that also the kind of people who are watching Formula One in India are probably English speakers. In fact, when I was watching a Formula One on Hotstar, the last race, there were 70,000 other people in India only watching it live with me. And this was towards the end of the race when it was not that interesting either. So that means it's a pretty big fan base in India as well. Then I thought about how about an e-commerce store. So I searched for Formula One e-commerce stores and I found a couple of them, but all of them are based in the EU or in the US or somewhere else. There are no Formula One stores in India. And then shipping from those places is like 20 euros. And each shirt costs like 70 euros, 80 euros, and it's pretty damn expensive. And not too many Indians will buy it except for the really rich ones. So then the idea came that, hey, why not start an e-commerce store that's focused on Formula One fans in India? Specifically, maybe Formula One, like jokes, Formula One memes, e-commerce store focused in India. This is an absolutely ridiculously off the beat idea, but not as good as Siddharth's religious ideas. But what do you think?
I mean, it should be pretty straightforward, right? Go look at what people are searching for in all these keyword research tools and try and build something around that. I would assume that's how straightforward it is. Apart from the fact that you'll probably have to do some sort of licensing deals and stuff like that. I know there's a company called The Sold Store, S-O-U-L-E-D, which has done some partnerships with, you know, football clubs like Manchester United and other clubs. Maybe they're the best suited to sort of do some creative partnerships, branding licensings, brand licensings with Formula One and create more products. I think that's kind of obvious.
So that reminds me about something. Sorry, we did one of our earlier episodes with a brand licensing company. And they were talking about how brand licensing is a huge, 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 huge market across the world. And it's just starting to pick up in India as well. So like you mentioned, why not do some brand licensing deals with Indian manufacturers? Maybe you could broker it or whatever, or if you have a manufacturing unit yourself. And you can make F1 branded maybe toys or F1 branded machinery, F1 branded tools. That would be interesting to a car enthusiast. How about that? That's a better idea than my e-commerce store.
Exactly. That's a better idea that you came up with here than all the research that you did prior to the episode. But I think what I'm excited by is not so much about the potential of it in India, because I do think whatever said and done, India is going to be still a very small market for something like Formula One. If it's growing globally, what kind of internet businesses can you build out of riding this wave of Formula One? One of the things that comes to my mind that happened with football, at least, is because there are so many fantasy games that are around football, and so with like Formula One, I think there's a Formula One fantasy also. There are a lot of content that's generated to help players who are playing this fantasy game. And a lot of this content oftentimes is also behind a paywall. So if you're really into Formula One, if you can go down to the, you know, details of like looking at numbers and analytics in previous races and and doing a bunch of that number crunching, that data is going to be valuable to a niche audience on the internet. It sounds a small like thing to solve for, but global audience is going to make you, it's going to result in a side hustle that's profitable at the very least if you pull something off in this space. Even betting bettors who bet on like Formula One stuff will need this kind of data. And I know this exists for like basketball and football and cricket and whatnot. I don't know if not as much in cricket, but anything that has fantasy and betting related stuff, there's an information economy behind it that somebody could potentially get into. That's my contribution to what you could do in the F1 space. I still haven't seen the Netflix show. I still don't see the F1 races. I don't get it, but yeah.
It's a fun sport. I think you should do it. I think Tanai will build a cohort-based course on how you can do betting for Formula One. I think that's going to be Tanai's contribution.
Yeah, I think a data analytics course is always there on the cards, but you can have a F1 themed data analytics course. I think that would be exciting for people because you always need a theme to teach something. But coming to the topic of F1 related business, I think people invest in sports because they have this need, right, to feel that they are connected to something big. Sports is also another need like that. If F1 becomes that big, you would want to be connected. And that's why you wear a t-shirt of, you know, Sachin Tendulkar. Like, why do you wear someone like Sachin on your chest? Because you feel he's superpower. So I think that brand, until that brand comes into India, that would be a hard play. The e-commerce thing would be a hard play. But at the same time, I think there's another play here. People go to F1 or golf, not only for the, I don't know, for the excitement. They also go to it for status. And there's a bigger market in India, which is, you know, striving for status, like people buying iPhones, iWatch, all overpriced status items, status symbols, right? I think India has a great potential for F1 because everybody's getting richer day by day. The rich, at least, is getting richer day by day. And then if you market it in a way wherein you belong to a special club for F1, wherein even $20 shipping or licensing deals wouldn't cost much because the exclusivity of it, the social media, things like that. Like, think why people buy NFTs. Makes no sense. It's a social value. So if you play on the social value thing, I think that would work out well for this entire piece.
Tanay, I completely agree with you. And that's something I was going to mention as well, is that F1 is so exclusive and it's so expensive. There are very few people in the world who can afford to go to an F1 race. They're very few people. In fact, half of the drivers, their dads are like billionaires or their dads are worth like hundreds of millions of dollars. You can't even get into the sport if you're not super rich. And like you said about exclusivity and, you know, making a club out of it, for all the people in India who own a Porsche, you can join the Porsche Drivers Club. And then they do every Sunday, they do some kind of drive on in Bombay. I don't know where. But I completely agree with you that if you can somehow make it a status symbol, make a like a really expensive custom made holiday where you're going to see an F1 race in like Azerbaijan or in Paris or something like that, you know, that'd be cool. And that's something that I think a lot of Indians would eat up because like, hey, main toh yahan pe gaya. They can tell all their friends on Instagram and all that stuff. Tanay, it was great speaking to you today and it was a really fantastic conversation. Really loved learning more about what you guys are doing at Neogi. And I'm sure that you guys are never going to face the problem that I was talking about not having enough people in your cohort because you have a 3,000 people waiting list. So many people want to learn coding and you guys are offering something that not a lot of other people are offering. Affordability, somebody who has a vast amount of knowledge and experience. And it's going to be amazing. I'm so excited to see where you guys go, Tanay. And yeah, all the best and good luck.
Thank you.